Welcome to Is Able, the radio show about possibility, where we look at what a person with disabilities can do rather than what they cannot do. Hello, this is Dr. Stephen W. Nurse, and this is our third series for the Is Abled show. Our show is this time on Vietnam and looking at returning vets and looking at all the kind of, I guess you could call it, collateral damage from the war. Our program is called The 52-Year War in Vietnam. And somebody asked me, why 52 years? Because April 30th this year is the anniversary of the war. And that's actually only 47 years from the end of the war. But in deference to the vet that I talked to, served on combat duty, had been there 52 years ago. And his statement was, it's a war that I'm still fighting in my head. And I think that that's a very true statement. I think when you listen to all the interviews, you'll find that there are many consequences. I'm not just saying of this war, but of every war, that affect families, affect friends, everyone you know. And so with that, I want to let you know that I'm going to be doing interviews today with Lisa Devereaux, who is the... Lisa, what's your title there at the funeral home?
Funeral director.
Funeral director. And with Eric Ireland. And Eric is retired and in a comfortable position right now. And we're going to talk about the Vietnam Memorial on Vashon. Part of that is because Vashon Island at that time had a population of about 5,600 people and yet lost 12 young men in the Vietnam War, killed in action. And Lisa and Eric worked on a memorial for Vietnam veterans that's at one of the local parks. Also, Mike Bradley was involved in that. We're not talking with him today. So let's get started and let's start with Lisa and ask her kind of how this program evolved.
Well, so I'd like to be clear that this is really Eric and Mike's project. The funeral home was involved by helping them to access names and confirm information. But really, they did all the footwork. And I have continued that project by using these different wars and different military events to make Memorial Day speeches and memorials so that those names aren't forgotten, which I know was one of Eric's main goals. And so we have just continued to build on what Eric and Mike started.
And I know as I get older, one of the things that I think about is that Memorial Day really is a day to remember people and not just a vacation and a day off. And it really is for a purpose. And so why don't we go to Eric? And since Lisa kind of gave you the accolades on this, Eric, tell me about how you got involved in this and why it was important to you.
Well, firstly, thank you, Lisa, and thank you, Doctor, for having me on. Al Bradley, Michael was Al's brother, and he just recently passed. So my partner on the project was Alan Bradley, as folks know him on the island. How I got started, I moved on the island in 1981. And I think the first Memorial Day I attended, I asked, now I realize it was the funeral director, Tim Wilcox, and I asked where the Vietnam Memorial was because I had brought some flowers, and he said, we don't have one. what we do is we use this more general obelisk to represent the various boars or service individuals. So I've thought about that over the years, and around the time of the Gulf War, 1991, I started doing some research, and through that research, I come to realize, or going through, I spent a considerable amount of time at the library doing on the microfiche and going through the old beachcombers, and these names would come up, these photos of these individuals, and I wasn't aware, didn't know any of them, and it was one turns into three, and three into five, and pretty soon you have a dozen individuals that I'm unfamiliar with that have lost, you know, served and died in Vietnam. And so that was the beginning. And it really didn't get going. I think I made a presentation briefly with the community council and the VFW at that time, and nothing had happened. And so come, gosh, what was it? Probably April or May of 1998, I was talking to a friend of mine, Phil Volker, who certainly was one of the major catalysts in making this happen, because he got Al and I together. And Al, we both had this similar idea of creating this memorial. And so Al, it wasn't that I was familiar. I've known Al for many years. It was just that I didn't know of his service history. And mm-hmm. so we came together and that was the beginning. But as far as my personal motivation, you know, it's as varied as, like for most of us, we have a variety of reasons. One of them is that I think young men that leave the, as I think I may have said some years ago, the comfort of home and hearth to represent, to serve, to protect this nation, They deserve to be remembered or honored, and so
I think I think that's, you know, that's one of the things that really strikes me in looking at the people that I'm interviewing. And I was and I mentioned this to Lisa just as we were talking before this program, that I've got pictures of some of the kids that I graduated with. And of mm-hmm. course, in 1966, you know, there was no taking a picture when you were in a tree or on a bicycle or whatever was important to you. You took the picture with a little black bow tie and a white sports coat, and you looked the same way, and you all had short hair. And to realize that 2 years later, these kids were with people shooting at them. And the other thing that kind of happened that was in common was one thing that you said, was that a lot of these guys, I asked the question in some preliminary questions, what did you think about going? Did you want to go to Vietnam? And I would say it's about 50-50, but almost all of them said, I did it because that's what you did at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it was post-Korean War. It was post-World War II. Almost all of these kids' fathers were either in World War II or the Korean War, and so felt an obligation to go to serve country. So I think that's really critical. Lisa, what can you tell me about these 12 people? Were they just fresh out of high school? What ages were they? What can you tell me?
They were fresh out of high school. They were young. They were the senior class picture that you're describing, the bow tie and the set portrait. And those are the pictures that get placed every year now at the cemetery by Chris Gaynor. He actually laminates a picture in their story and puts it out on all the places, all the graves at the cemetery that he's located.
And Chris is, I was actually with Chris yesterday at the Vet Center, and Chris is wonderful. I'd say young guys. See, that's a fact. When I get to be, 73 myself, 60 and younger are young guys, but Chris is also one of those persons, and I know he wouldn't mind me saying this, that has the residual effect from the Vietnam War, and that he was in combat, and he's been affected by Agent Orange, which I can think of many others on the island that have. My neighbor, and I think even Phil Volker was has had some residual effects from that. But Chris has Parkinson's, which was a fairly common effect of being around Agent Orange, which was kind of the roundup of the time.
Right.
And we think of the effects, even the people in Vietnam, when I talk to my friend, they, four generations, past the Vietnam War, there are, birth defects and the same type of effects of those things in Vietnam. Lisa, do they have a special ceremony there at the memorial each year, or where somebody presents, or do they just set the pictures up, or how?
No, there's a full Memorial Day celebration, 11 o'clock every Monday, Memorial Day.
Uh-huh.
We get quite a large community turnout. We have different speakers. For years and years, it was sort of a set program, and then our audience started decreasing. And so we started trying to do more of a theme for each year. We've done the Vashon 12, we did the World War II, we did a thing on the Nike site. It's nice to just sort of honor different groups, and so that, they can be recognized. I do find that they don't like it when I call out their names in the audience. They don't like to be recognized publicly, but it's nice to honor our veterans.
Yeah, and I think that, when we think of veterans, we do think of that person with the metal helmet and the gun out there in the field. But when it really comes right down to it, for every person in the military who is out there in the field, there are 23 other people employed by the military that in some way support that person.
Wow.
And these are, I was looking at some of the pictures that some of the folks sent me. And here's one of my friends that worked on autopilot systems for F-4 jets. And they've got a whole, kind of a whole bunker built for this and all this test equipment. And I'm just thinking of getting all this material from point A to point B, just, and there's like towns built in Vietnam, Chu Lai and Da Nang Airport and all those places. Eric, tell me, as you did the research and found the information on these folks, on these 12,
yes, sir.
Did you feel kind of a connection, or did you, I think we have to put to have something be important to us like that, instead of just saying, 500,000 people die from COVID in this country, once you put a face on the picture, it makes a difference. Did you, through doing your research, kind of feel a connection like this?
Absolutely. No question about it. Initially you're thinking, you're not really thinking specifics other than it's a project that you're passionate about, and you're going to pick that ball up and you're going to carry it to the end. And my objective is to represent those individuals, those men and their families, and do so in a respectful, honorable way. And through this process, you're contacting the families, whether it's by phone, letter, you're contacting them through other parties, or in one or two cases, you receive an address and knock on the door. So as this went along over the 7 or 8 months, you're developing a connection with the family members, and you're getting to know, acquainted with the individuals. And so you're now becoming, it's so much more than you can really could have anticipated or appreciated. You are emotionally invested, and you hear the stories. And I've got, I was privy to, conversations and insights that you just simply were unfamiliar with, or it was unknown. And I had some of these people I'd known for a number of years, and whether it was through work or just interactions on the island, you just, hi, how are you? Thank you very much, and move on. But it brought them to life, and you became protective. It was a tremendous responsibility that you had. And you're absolutely right. I mean, you think about, we throw out numbers during the war. We threw out numbers presently because of COVID. But when you hear the stories of one individual and you're meeting the father and he talks about the loss of the son, it's moving. It's probably one of the greatest things I'd ever participated in, most substantive. And we owe those service members, whether they're the 12 that are represented in name on that memorial or that served with honor and distinction in Vietnam, that we owe them a great, so much more than just simple gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that, and I think also when we're at that age that they were, there's kind of a feeling of immortality. You've kind of maybe had, grandma or grandpa or someone pass away in your family. When I was young like that, just a few years ago, I remember that if we got a long distance call to our house, it was either someone was really sick or someone was dead in the family. And, then it put a face on it. But these kids just seem kind of to be immortal. And when I look at these pictures, they're out in the field and they're smiling. And, I asked them if they were afraid, and they said the situations where they should have been afraid, they didn't have time to be afraid. If you thought about it, it was too late. That you didn't, you just reacted. And just one of the guys I'm interviewing later on today, I said, what happened when you landed in Vietnam? And he said, well, as he was landing in Vietnam, the airfield was being shelled. And he said, I'm thinking to myself, this is a great start to this whole thing. You're not even on the ground yet, and you're already being shelled. Also, so much of it was, at least on our side, on the American side, the vast majority of the Vietnamese that were killed in the war were killed through bombings. United States had far, far more military power, but the Vietnamese had many more people and fought a different type of war. Lisa, do you know of any of the men that were killed during the war that... And you had any connection with families? And I don't want you to, to give any, personal information. But do you have any feeling about that, or did that occur?
Of course, I was too young to know them personally.
I knew that.
But I do go to Washington, D.C. every year for my work, and I do make it a point to go to the wall and to try to find all 12 names from Vashon. my best friend is Glenn Rogenbuck, who is related to Don Holkey. And I always send him a picture from the wall. It's just, you know, I'm connected to their families. I know the families out here who are still, that are still on the island, but I was too young to know them that went away.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and let's, Eric, have you been back to the wall? Have you seen that too?
I have. I was there about 2.5 weeks after 9/11. So I was in Washington. I went to Arlington and the Pentagon, and I saw the aftermath of the terrorist attack. If I may share one story from the memorial that I think is...
Please do.
Well, it was... I'd accumulated 10, 11 names. It was a bit of a process. And so it was a matter of contacting Olympia, Washington, Veterans Affairs, Department of Defense in Washington, D.C., and then, of course, Lisa, or the previous funeral directors, both of them, is to put together this name, this list of names. And there was someone said, I have an address for you. And it was down in Ellisport. I went there and I knocked on it. Well, I drove up and there was a slight, small elderly man sitting in a rocking chair. And I introduced myself and told him what I was there for, why I was there. And he said, come into my house and have a seat. That was all that was said. He excused himself, went to the back room, and shuffled back in with a small cardboard box and promptly he placed it in front of me. And he said, Timmy, I think what you're looking for, you will find here. And I opened it up, and in it was baseball, little league scores, Boy Scout related items. What it was papers, the sum of his son's life. His son had been killed in Vietnam on his 23rd birthday. And it was through meeting this individual that we became friends. I became familiar with his son and their relationship and what his son was like. And during the process of creating the memorial, when we had the columns, the basalt columns at Fort Bradley, Al Bradley's property, the gentleman came to the property and helped polish out the area where his son's name would eventually be sandblasted. And it was at that point when we had ear protection, eye protection, felt mask, he paused and removed his gear, and I leaned over and I said to him, Mr., how do you feel? And he paused and he said, my Johnny has been gone for nearly 30 years, and this is the closest I've felt in all that time. That the closest that I have felt to him in all that time. So it was at that, I get emotional thinking about it, because it was. And it was at that moment. It brought it all together as to what the memorial represents. And you times that by tens of thousands of lives that were affected. And, of course, not just by the direct participants, but I think about the wives and the children. And, you know, it's Vietnam is a pebble, a boulder in a very, very large pond, and the ripple effects, that's just what it brings you home, is that one. I'm sure that this gentleman is long past, but his son, he wrote a letter during a firefight, if you can believe that. I've not been in combat. It's hard to imagine that in a moment of respite from being nearly overrun, he's writing a letter to his folks. And in that letter, he's commenting about some birthday to his mother and father. That letter, I'm assuming, was retrieved from his body. And it took a year for that to be returned to the States. And the gentleman had that. I try to refrain from giving names because it's not my prerogative, and out of respect for these people. They've already suffered enough. And so But I asked him, I said, his son was a tunnel rat, as he described it. He was small of stature, and he was happy to go in and do his, what was, he volunteered to do that. He crawled down into these holes in the ground. I don't know if he was armed or not, but he did that, and that's what his son did. And I asked him, what kind of individual was your son that he would take the time out to write a sort of a goodbye letter? They realized that they were in a dire situation. He goes, that's just Johnny. That's how he was. That's how he was. So I just wanted to share that. I mean,
Yeah. There's
a list of stories that are parallel or similar to that, and learning things from Al Bradley himself. And I want to really emphasize, I mean, how, what a pleasure it was to work with him, and so instrumental. I mean, I couldn't have asked for a better person to have been associated with such a project. I mean, it was our pleasure is a ridiculous word to use.
It's our honor
to do that.
It's kind of hard to find the right words for that. And I think generally I had a friend also who was a tunnel rat, and they basically usually went into the tunnel with a flashlight and a 45, and that's about it. And the tunnels were booby-trapped, all kinds of crazy things down there. I also think it's interesting that I think people tend to deny, you know, and maybe Lisa, you can comment on this too, but it seems like sometimes with death, people want to kind of open up. You know, people don't know what to say. I know how you feel. No, you don't.
No, you don't.
No, you never know how somebody feels. And I think that in a situation like this, I've run into one gentleman who's really never even told his wife about it. One of the guys that I graduated with that was just a very normal kid, you know, played tennis, went out and hunted and fished with us, who just opened up like a dam breaking because he hadn't talked to anybody about this. And here's a kid that's in my Spanish class and is now, you know, a gunner on a Huey and running in and out of hot zones all the time. So mm-hmm. I think that's really important. What do you think about that, Lisa? Don't you think it is true? It's got to be unique for everybody. And
I think Chris Gaynor did more for the community than he even knows by opening up and telling his story, because it let other veterans know that there's people who want to hear what you have to say. We don't, you know, it's a story we want to hear. We want you to feel better. We want you to share that story. And, you know, my dad was Korean War. When he passed away, he had never talked about any of the things he saw or did. And I think it was kind of the norm that they came home and didn't talk about it. And I think that's something we should change. I see the people coming home now, and the families are the ones who didn't come home. And those stories need to be told and shared so that they can live on. And as Eric has said to me many times, so their names aren't forgotten.
And that is so important too, because I think those, you know, history repeats itself. I don't want to get political here, but I get very worried sometimes when we try to make history too politically correct and don't really deal with all the issues. So I think that's about all the time we have for this series. Eric, I think your stories and what you said makes me wish you were still on Vaishan and I could meet you in person.
Someday we may.
Yeah, we may. And Lisa, if I ever die, and I don't plan on it, I think you'd be a great funeral director for me. So
thank you.
With that, at least a little positive there. thank you very much. And I think everything that Eric said was positive also. I mean to say that very truthfully.
Yeah, I just want to thank the veterans again. They're fantastic. They're Vietnam, Korea, World War II. They're all equal too. They're patriots, and they all served with honor and distinction.
Yep. I agree.
They're one's as good as the next, and I want to thank them very much.
Thank you, Eric. You've been great. And thank you, Vaishan, and we will see you next week.
To stream this or any other episode of Is Abled with Dr. Stephen W. Nurse, go to voiceofvaishan.org and look under the Shows tab.